Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week, I spoke to Justice Minister Andrew Little on the government's review on livestock exports following the sinking of the ship Gulf Livestock One in the East China Sea near Japan. But I began by asking the minister on the Mount Roscoe Evangelical Fellowship Church cluster. As Health Minister Chris Hipkins said yesterday, not everyone had been disclosing full details of their close contacts. The Health Minister yesterday said on Radio New Zealand that some people of the Mount Roscoe cluster are not disclosing the full details of their close contacts. So why do you think people don't do this?
Well, look, I think there are some in the community who are sceptical about COVID-19. You know, there's a bit of conspiracy theory about it. There's some people have kind of made up their own slightly kind of ideological, if somewhat warped, views about it. So, and people are picking up the sort of stuff they see online. And because it's invisible, and although you hear stories about numbers of cases and fatalities, unless you see it physically, then you know, I can imagine there'd be some people who think, well, is this really real? Particularly where people are not trusting of authority, you know, government authority, and there are people who live that sort of way. So it appears that, you know, in that particular community, that church community, there are some people who have that view, who weren't particularly respectful of the health warnings, didn't think it was real, didn't think they had to observe the sort of rules that the rest of us are observing. And they have now caused the virus to spread even more than otherwise would have been the case. And part of their scepticism is that they didn't think it was necessary to fully cooperate with the authorities when they were doing the contact tracing. So it is unfortunate, but it's a wake-up call, and I think the reality is, I think even that community now realises that this thing is real, and we have a virus that is very contagious, and we have to, there's things we have to do if we want to stop it spreading, and they understand that now.
I know some places overseas there are laws to comply people to fully disclose any information needed to health officials. Is there similar stuff here in New Zealand?
We don't have a specific penalty about failing to fully disclose your contacts. I mean, we have an obligation to cooperate when there is an outbreak, as there is, and you know that you've been in contact, then authorities will contact you and ask you. But on all the health orders that we put together, we haven't made a specific penalty for failing to fully disclose those sorts of details. And because sometimes, you know, people do forget, people don't remember every precise place they've been or the people they've had contact with. Sometimes it takes people a day or two to kind of, you know, collect their memories and then pass that on. So, and the way we've tried to approach this, we've got to have some rules, some hard lines, but otherwise we want to do this on as cooperative a basis as possible. So we don't have the basis to penalise there. That said, I mean, there's plenty of other things that we do require people to do, and if they don't do, there's the potential for penalties. So, if you're required to isolate because you've either had a test or you're symptomatic and you're waiting for the test, if you don't isolate, then, you know, you are liable for a fine or even up to 6 months in prison. So there are some stiff penalties for, you know, some aspects of failing to cooperate.
As you mentioned earlier, when it comes to the church community, I think that that's the same for other ethnic minority communities as well. It is very easy for misinformation regards to COVID-19 to be spread very easily. So is the government doing anything to combat these sort of misinformation or encourage people to follow official advice?
Well, all we can do is to put it out there, and that's why, you know, up until recently we had the 1 p.m. briefing. We got a huge amount of information on the COVID-19 website. We're constantly pushing public health messages so that people get that. But look, you do have people, you know, you've got people who've got a political party, the public party, standing up there with this sort of conspiracy-laden kind of view of the world and spouting complete and utter nonsense and rubbish. So the best we can do is to continue to put our own information into the public space and counter those sorts of views. What some people are saying is not scientific. and not helpful. But, you know, we can't be across every Facebook account or every Twitter account when people might say ridiculous things. What we've got to do is make sure that, you know, when the health ministry or the health minister or anybody else in a position of authority is speaking, that we get that message out as loudly and as clearly as we can.
Speaking of the Public Party, they recently have made some controversial comments. What are your comments on these?
I think they've got a track record of saying really dopey things, in my view, and really undermining the public health message and the public health need, actually, and putting people at risk. So I think, I know people have written to me and expressed deep concern about it. I know that there are people who are looking closely at what they're saying and doing. I think if there's any suggestion that they are encouraging anybody to act recklessly or to act in a way that's going to compromise other people's health, then, you know, at some point the authorities will step in. You know, we do have public nuisance type sort of charges in our statute books, and if there are people who are deliberately and in a calculated way, you know, acting in a way that can spread the virus and put other people's health at risk, then, you know, we've got to do what we can to stop that. So, but, you know, it's not our style isn't to come down with a heavy hand. It is to try to educate people, persuade them. But we know, as with the latest outbreak, you know, there are some communities that are at greater risk. Pacifica and Māori communities in particular are at greater risk. So if the virus gets away in those communities, that is going to put not just people's health at risk, but going to put their lives at risk. And we've already seen two further deaths in the latest cluster, and we don't want to see any more.
Will we see a law suppressing people from spreading misinformation by any chance?
It's really hard to define what that would look like. I mean, we do, you know, we have freedom of speech is very important to us. It's in our New Zealand Bill of Rights Act. There's a difference between, you know, actively inciting physical harm to somebody, and we do have laws against that, compared to somebody who just has a nutty idea that might be appealing to some people and could, you know, raise the risk of further spreading the virus. Trying to get the balance right without compromising free speech and the importance we attach to that right is very difficult. So that's why the best thing is to make sure that we have good information out there in the public, and we're constantly repeating it, and hope that others see those who are, you know, frankly more reckless, not very thoughtful, for what they are, which is that they're not well informed and they're not acting in the best interests of anybody in particular.
Moving on to another topic, I want to talk about livestock exporting, but first of all, I kind of want to start. Are there any updates from the New Zealand government on the two New Zealanders who were on board Gulf Livestock One?
No, I mean, the latest was, I think, yesterday the Japanese were resuming the search for survivors. They had to suspend it because the second typhoon came through. But we're very much in the hands of the Japanese on this and what they do and how they respond, and they're keeping us as best informed as they can. But there hasn't been a great deal of activity over the last couple of days because of the second typhoon.
Now, the government has suspended livestock export. Is it? What's the next step for it? Is it going to outright ban it or continue it in the near future?
Look, it is suspended for now. I know that the Minister of Agriculture, Damien O'Connor, is concerned that assurances that he thought he was given about the safety and security of the trade, both for, you know, in terms of animal welfare, but also crew who are on board, may not have been, the assurances he was given may not have been quite accurate. And so he wants to have a look further into that, get further advice about that. Look, it is a legitimate point of debate about whether we do live animal exports. It is stressful for animals. That said, it's a source of income for farmers raising livestock here who get more per head of beast exporting livestock overseas than they often do, you know, sitting after the abattoir here. So there's a few different interests to weigh up. The critical thing is that animal welfare has got to be paramount. We know we've had situations in the past where livestock have been exported and there's been a huge fatality rate, huge casualty rate, and that ought to give us pause for thought. Is this a thing worth doing given the impact on the livestock involved?
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.